Yep. Okay, there's meeting information. Gordon. Huh? You're cutting out a little bit. Repeat that last part. Post, okay. Host tools, would that be it? Okay. It's not talking right. Okay. No.
Request host to start cloud recording. Check. Remove participant. Suspend participant active login. Check. Enable waiting room. Apply profile attention. Allow all participants to call the chat screen. Check. Check. Rename cell. User cell. Check. Start video. Check. Share whiteboard. Check.
I'm not finding a co-host or. Huh? Okay, but wait. That's share notes. Oh, is that what it was? Oh, okay. I'm gonna enter on that then.
Enter.
Now.
Suspend participant. Remove participant. Suspend log needed. Object. Enable waiting room. Object.
Well,
allow all participants. Chat. Chat. Rename themselves. Unmute themselves. Start video.
I'm going back through that list.
Chat. Share notes. Object.
Get out of that page. I'm hoping it's saying uncheck, though. That says notes. That says notes. Yeah, that's share notes.
Collaborate with Zoom back. Send me the time to bring the request to report and builder. Request on the start cloud report. Remove participant. Suspend participant. Log in. Enable waiting room.
Let's see if I can find that share thing.
Chat, check, rename themselves, do success, start video, share whiteboards, check, share notes, check, log page, SHARE space, NO,
let's share notes again.
Space,
I'm going back.
Title is now needed, menus.
Okay. All right. So I can get out of that part.
Control W.
Well, come on. I didn't think so. I didn't touch anything that said recording, though.
Control W.
All right, yeah, back to that original thingy. Oh, no, I'm not. I did control W. All right, I'll just do F4 then. Oh. Nope. Better not. Okay, well. When, is that because I'm technically hosting right now or something? Oh, I don't like that. Well, I noticed Mary has not downloaded the board meeting, so I couldn't delete that. And I noticed that the convention business meeting recording has not been downloaded or deleted. I didn't want to touch it because probably hasn't been written up. Yeah, I'm failing. Yeah. Yeah, I still need to learn that stuff because I wanted to listen to those board meeting recordings that were just like a couple of minutes long to see if I could tell who was doing it, you know, but I don't know how to listen when I'm in that managing a recording thing. I guess I got to go to another page, you know, whether it's not a managing page. So I don't know. What time you got? Oh, okay.
Local
I got to a different page.
Title is this PC.
Yeah, somehow I got into this PC. Oh. Nope, don't need to do that. Well, Regina, I just heard Regina's here. Oh, do I need to hang up? I guess I should hang up, huh? Okay. I'll listen to you on the computer rather than the phone. How's that? Okay.
Hi, Regina.
Regina. Well, she's muted.
Actually, that was pretty good. Not many feedback, even though we were both on Zoom and both, that we weren't getting any feedback. That was pretty good.
Well, and I'm not using my headphone. I'm just talking to the computer, so that would help sound a little bit. But my headphone is a Bluetooth, and my hearing aid is a Bluetooth, and they X out each other.
Oh,
that doesn't, yeah, that doesn't work. I have to put my old hearing aid in if I use it. Yeah. Well, how do I get to the other screen, like if I want to unmute a person or something?
That is that is through the participants list. Okay.
That didn't help. I would hate to accidentally hit the enter button and end the meeting.
If you are the sign in to
Here's Rich.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm here. I'm trying to get some training from Deanne on hosting because I don't have a clue.
Ah, well, I don't either.
No, I don't.
Hello.
Pat.
Hi, you saw
Hello.
That? Hello,
hi,
who's here?
Regina and Rita and Deanne and Rich, and I'm not sure who else.
Oh, yeah, wonderful.
That's it.
Hope you like the picture. Send it to Cindy of the auction item. Meredith is such a cool person.
Yeah, we're waiting on Meredith.
Turn off TV.
Oh, we have a guest.
Yeah.
An unfamiliar name.
Yeah, I didn't recognize it. Hi, welcome.
Hello.
I wonder if she's unmuted or maybe she's not.
Jenny? Is that what her?
Oh. It's actually Meredith Howell. I'm gonna log and sign back in under mine. For some reason I'm on her account from a past meeting. I'll get it off. Thank you. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention there because actually I did receive an email, Rita, that told me that I could have logged in as host.
You did?
Yeah, I was trying to do that when you were asking about the other name. So now I'm back out of that. But that's weird.
I have to leave at 7:45. Rita, can I mention the hospitality room, please? In case some of the parents want to come talk informally with people?
If we were on the convention call, yeah, but
this is
your chance.
This is information station. And something we need to remind people about, Deanne, whoever ends up hosting the information station or any other recordings, is the recording is getting all the small talk before the meeting starts. And since we don't know how to edit yet, when the information station goes to the website, we're going to hear chit chat. And it may involve personal names and personal issues. And now we've got the real Meredith.
Yes.
All this is talking about a room.
All right. Yeah, we don't have very many on here yet.
Is Dolly going to get on, or do you know, Rita?
Well, it's 6:59.
Are you coming on information station? Question mark.
I said, is Dolly going to get on, or do you know?
Yes. I just texted her.
Okay.
She's usually on. Yeah.
Well, we haven't started yet.
I sent a lot of reminders.
Hi, it's Dolly.
Oh,
Dolly.
Okay.
Hi.
There she is. There's Dolly.
Yeah. I'm here.
Okay. I just don't know where Barbara, they weren't at home, but she said she might try to dial in from the car or something. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Meredith, I apologize. I have to leave 15 minutes before the program ends. And just one
Here's
thing.
There's David.
I will.
Hey,
I'll
David.
Be there.
Yay.
Sorry. I'll be there at 1:45 on the 19th. And at our convention, there's a relaxation room if your parents want to come relax.
Sounds good.
Deanne?
Now, it's about 2 after. I know we'll have a couple people coming in. Rita, do we have any announcements we need to make before we start the meeting?
Just what I was talking about before David came on. When we have any Zoom meetings, we need to remember that the recording has started when the host is on the call. And we need to refrain from chit-chatting about personal things, because especially the information stations will eventually be on our website. And I don't think we want our personal business put out there for the whole world to listen to. So just an FYI. And we're going to let Meredith, I told her she's going to do her thing. And then if she gets finished in plenty of time, we may do a little discussing about what we want to do in regards to having a session at the convention this fall concerning the parents and their children.
Okay.
So it depends on how long she needs to talk and how many questions and all that. So, all right, Deanne, I'm done.
All right. Well, Meredith, we want to thank you for joining us this evening and sharing with us a little bit about VIPS, sharing a little bit about yourself and asking us any questions you want to ask us.
So, great.
I'll open the floor and let you have the floor and let you go.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me tonight. My name is Meredith Howell. I'm the Director of Community Outreach and Advocacy for Visually Impaired Preschool Services, or otherwise known as VIPS. And so just a little bit about VIPS. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we provide early intervention that is specific to children who are babies and toddlers ages birth to 3 who are blind or visually impaired. And we serve the entire state of Indiana. We, we'll travel. We have teachers of blind and low vision, developmental interventionists with extensive vision specific training, and then certified orientation and mobility specialists that travel to the children's homes to work on, developmental goals that the parents might have for the child or that the child is working on, really just help the parent, kind of have a better understanding of their child's visual impairment and what it means and, what the diagnosis entails and, are there medical interventions? Are there, can glasses help? There are a lot of different, times where a parent will go into an ophthalmology appointment and learn that their baby is blind or visually impaired. And, they often will say that don't remember much after those words were spoken because it's something that they weren't expecting. And and not necessarily prepared for. And so our interventionists and teachers go in and really help them, you know, look at the I report. What does this mean? What types of is the child ready for a white cane because they're starting to be mobile and active in their surroundings? What types of things can we do at the daycare if the child's at daycare to set the teachers up there so that, or the daycare providers, so that they have a better understanding of how to work with that child who is blind or visually impaired? And, just really wrapping the parents with support. I myself am a mom of a now 13-year-old who has something called cortical visual impairment. It's the leading cause of visual impairments in kids today. It's a brain-based visual impairment, so it means that Lola's eyes take in the images, but her brain can't process them quickly. The one thing about CVI, cortical visual impairment, is that it can actually improve through early intervention if it's caught early, if diagnosed early, because the brain is so plastic at that young age that new neural pathways can be created. And I watch, through early intervention, through VIPs coming into my home, watched Lola's brain learn how to see over time. She also, not every child will have that same outcome. We serve children with all sorts of different visual impairments, optic nerve atrophy, coloboma, Leber's, just all shaken babies or having cortical visual impairment as a result of shaken baby syndrome or, rare genetic diseases, all sorts of various different diagnoses. But, the thing about it is, much like I went through, I just didn't really understand how to engage with Lola, how to interact with her. She was the first blind person that I ever really had intimate contact with, and that was my baby. And so, she didn't make any eye contact with me when she was born. And so I had a feeling right away that something was going on with her vision, but the pediatrician just kept saying that everything was fine. And then at 4 months of age, she started having infantile spasms, which is a rare and catastrophic form of epilepsy. And then at 7 months of age, she was diagnosed with that CVI, as well as other visual impairments on top of that, optic nerve hypoplasia, nystagmus, optic atrophy. So she went on to be diagnosed with a rare genetic disease. She was one of the first 20 in the world diagnosed with a Bosch-Boonstra-Shape optic atrophy syndrome. So we lucked out in that lottery. Don't know how she won that one, but she is, just really doing amazing thanks to, the strategies that VIPS gave to me. We were kind of hopeless, not hopeless, I don't want to say, but we were living in Costa Rica. And when we moved back to Indianapolis, we couldn't find any resources. I searched for early intervention, and, at the time, First Steps didn't have anyone specific for vision loss, and the School for the Blind wasn't providing that direct outreach for the birth to 3-year-old population. So I was really kind of left on my own. And so thankfully I found VIPS. I was relentless. It took me about 4 months, but we were the 31st family to be served. VIPS started in Louisville, Kentucky, back in 1985, and had always been serving the southern Indiana region. But when a mom named Rebecca Davis moved to Bloomington from California, she couldn't find early intervention for her legally blind daughter. And so she Googled vision services, early intervention, and found VIPS in Kentucky, and literally drove her daughter from Bloomington to Louisville every week for over 2 years to get her access to the teachers and the, you know, vision specific intervention that she needed and the support that Rebecca needed. And so in 2011, she and Annie Hughes, a teacher of blind and low vision who had retired from the School for the Blind and Visually Impaired, they expanded VIPS into Indiana, you know, and started with 8 families in Bloomington. And then, like I said, I was the 31st, so grateful to have been the 31st family. And now we have served over 1,200 kids across the entire state. So our teachers travel as far north as, you know, Gary, and as our teachers down in Louisville might cross the river and serve kids down in Evansville or, you know, down in the Jeffersonville area. But, you know, wherever a child and a family is, we try to get to them as soon as we can. You know, there aren't a lot of teachers of blind and low vision. They are unicorns. So finding, you know, the best teachers with big empathetic hearts and the knowledge that they need in order to provide these services, you know, it's something that, you know, we continue to try to find people that are really good at what they do. And I'm so thankful that now we have built a network of teachers and contractors all throughout the state. And so when I say contractors, they are usually teachers of blind and low vision or early interventionists by day, maybe in the schools. And then they will pick up a child or two for VIPS and say that they absolutely love it. And it's great for those children because those children will eventually, you know, transition into that developmental preschool, depending on where they live. So VIPS is, you know, we have more than we just home visits. We have our parent empowerment program. And as I said, our orientation and mobility program, we built a family resource center in 2022, located at East Washington and Southeastern near downtown Indianapolis. And it's incredible. I mean, it's everything that I dreamed of having for my daughter, but had to drive to Kentucky to find. And I thought, why should families have to leave this state in order to find something that is accessible for their children? And so we had a $2.5 million capital campaign, and we were successful, and we have a sensory room and a toddler town and a teletherapy room, lending library filled with Braille writers and toddler Braille books and, you know, light boxes and, you know, everything that a family might need or that their children might need in order to, you know, really make it through different developmental goals and meet those milestones. And so, you know, we are, as I said, we're a nonprofit. So we are mostly funded for, well, we thankfully were successful this last legislative session in getting a line item specific for VIPS put into the state budget. That was a long process, a lot of advocating, a lot of meetings with a lot of legislators and trying to get the families activated and advocating for VIPS so that, you know, these are services that are in federally mandated. They are in state statute, and, you know, VIPS is the only one providing them. And so to have the weight of trying to raise, you know, all of the money, the almost $1 million it costs to serve these kids in Indiana, it kept and keeps me up at night because it is, you know, I know how valuable the services were for my own family, and I want to ensure that those services go on for others. So I'm thankful that we do have that line item now. I'll, you know, maybe call on people to, you know, call your legislators when the time comes again to make sure that we stay in there. But we are also a First Steps provider agency. And so the First Steps is the state's early intervention system. And so we do get some reimbursement through those visits. And then we write grants and have individual donations come in. We work with service clubs, a lot of Kiwanis clubs and Lions clubs and Sertoma clubs. And then also we have fundraisers. And so our fundraiser coming up is on Sunday, May 19th. That's at Crown Hill Cemetery. It's a walk, a family and pet walk that if anyone wants more information on, I would be happy to share. But our, all the money that we raise at the walk, our goal is to raise $23,000. And right now we are, I think, at about almost 14, over 14,000. So we have a little bit to go. So but if anyone wants to come walk or if you'd like to donate, please let me know and I can share more details about that. But there are if you ever want to come to VIPS for a tour or host a meeting at our Family Resource Center, we would most definitely welcome that. Just really look forward to finding, ways that we can partner in the future and have families have access to adults who are blind or visually impaired so that they recognize that, life goes on. I try to tell them that there will be a day where they'll wake up and, their child's visual impairment won't be the first thing on their mind. It will be, did they change the laundry or what are they going to cook for breakfast? Or, it just becomes a daily part of your life. And it's a beautiful one at that. And so, Lola is at Franklin. We live in Franklin Township. And so she goes to school on the southeast side of Indy. She's in an essential skills classroom. She did go to the school for the blind for the preschool years and then was diagnosed with autism and did other therapies for a couple of years and then went on to is now in sixth grade. And so is doing really well and is very supported in the school that she's in, has a lot of friends, is getting cane instruction and is learning as in the time that the path that she's on because she is developmentally delayed as well. So but we're doing she went on I went on to have a second child, Sebastian, who is now 10. He is neurotypical, does not have the same syndrome as Lola, and is not visually impaired. And he's her younger brother, but very much her older brother in life, and is such a great advocate and really helps motivate her and challenges her and also loves her dearly. So yeah, I think that's kind of the overview of it. Sorry if I went on for a while, but I'm just passionate about what we do because it changed my life.
Meredith, thank you for sharing. This is Deanne. I know when we started mainstreaming students from the School for the Blind into the public school system, I wondered what program or what services and programs from the School for the Blind would be decreased and eliminated that might benefit parents. I'm a child of the 60s. And at that point in time, the School for the Blind did have a preschool conference that happened every spring. I don't know when the last one of those happened, but I don't hear much about them happening. But I know in the day when I was born, my eye condition is not something that mine was a fluke of nature. It wasn't something carried on by genes or carried on through family history. So my parents had to learn what it was like to have a child who was visually impaired and that. And I know that just the networking that happened through the preschool conference, them getting to know other parents that had children that were visually impaired, them getting to know teachers of the visually impaired, at that young age did help out my parents in making decisions towards what they wanted to do with me as I grew up. And that at that point in time, they did, there wasn't the supports in the public school system that there are today. So the School for the Blind was the only choice my parents had to make for me. Other choices that my parents had to make, they left until I was an adult and could make those choices myself. And that was such as whether to have surgeries and stuff like that. So, I mean, the supports that the parents can get at a young age with their child and for themselves is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have, I don't know if the School for the Blind still does their preschool conference. The last, I mean, we meet with them monthly with their outreach director, Kara, who is amazing. And, you know, try to, you know, come up with ideas of ways we can collaborate and help with, you know, parents know that the School for the Blind is an option as their children transition out of VIPS at the age of three. But, you know, we obviously, if they're in different parts of the state, we're going to encourage them to go to their, you know, their baby, their little ones still. So we'll encourage them to go to their local developmental preschool and work with the, you know, during the case conference, help them come up with IEP goals, make sure that the children really have and the parents have the supports that they need so that it's not just like they turn three and we just kind of wash our hands. You know, we really help guide them through that whole process. And, you know, I still call on my VIPS friends at, you know, with Lola at 13, like, should we be doing this or is this an option? Or so, yeah. And so the thing about, you know, the one thing I will say too about, you know, mainstream for our kids is that, truthfully, about 70%, 70, 75% of the children that we serve have additional disabilities. So a lot has changed over the years. Visually impaired only is almost the minority. If, you know, these children have a myriad of different health challenges that go along with their visual impairments. And so, so it's difficult because, you know, as far as going into like the local school, you know, I would have loved for Lola to have been in a mainstream classroom, but it just, you know, she needs so much support beyond what, you know, what can be offered in that type of classroom, that, she really, you know, is flourishing, but needs extra people around her.
Meredith.
Yeah, this is Meredith. Just a minute, Pat. I'll just share that I think for years, we have realized that there were people with visual impairments going to the School for the Blind that had more than just one impairment.
Mm-hmm.
But typically blindness was the one that got the most attention.
Yeah. Yeah. And now, you know, I was telling, you know, someone the other day that my daughter's preschool teacher at the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired may have only had five kids in her class, but she probably had five kids with 40 different diagnoses combined. You know, I mean, it's a lot for teachers these days, because a lot of the children do have so many additional disabilities in addition to their visual impairment.
Okay, Pat, you needed to say something.
Thank you. Yeah, I did. Meredith, there's as I know, working with VIPS, the parents do interact a great deal because you have meetings and you have the annual conference in Kentucky every summer.
Yes, we have
the states with VIPS get together. I'll have other questions later, but there's a great deal of networking going on with parents, you know, for all sorts of things.
Definitely. I mean, and that's the thing. It, you know, parents might be able to interact through social media these days, but being able to sit down next to somebody and see, maybe what their children are doing or aren't doing, or how you can relate of, the different parts of what parents go through, the grief, the joy, the sadness, the elation, all of it. You go through a lot of different emotions. And so to have other parents to be able to connect with, we try to do open play. We do trainings with, like, we did had Gordon Holmes, who presented on special needs estate planning and wills, and trying to get we've had the Arc of Indiana. We really try to provide not only training but an and time for them to for their children to play and connect, but really time for them to let their guard down, realize that they're not on an island by themselves, and that we have a mom up in Fort Wayne and a mom in Indianapolis, and they meet at our family resource center. Both of their children have retinoblastoma, and so that connection, that real tangible friendship that they've been able to form through BIPs is just something that is definitely needed and irreplaceable. And we have a great family retreat down in Louisville, and we put the families up in hotels, and have an entire day of speakers and make and take for that the families get to participate in, and icebreakers, and their family and the kids are taken care of at VIPS for the entire day at our Kidstown preschool. So it's just for me, it really opened up my eyes to of what the possibility of not being alone on the journey, of feeling supported, that I went back to Indianapolis after I left the retreat, and armed with all this knowledge and and friendships that were made, and then our capital campaign. The gentleman, one of the other VIPS dads that I met at that very first family retreat, went on to be the largest individual donor to our capital campaign. So, you just, those friendships and are just so necessary, and that support as we go through this, because there's no manuals.
I think Mel had her hand raised.
Hello. I just wanted to say this is a pretty nifty resource. I'm sure my mom wished for that one when I was younger. but I also wondered if there were things that you were advocating for as far as with the state legislature and stuff in the future, if you could somehow let us know at the American Council for the Blind, because that's something that the American Council for the Blind does, is advocate and legislature and stuff.
Oh, I will definitely do that, Mel. Thank you. This next legislative session, we're trying to get legislation passed where a task force would be created to identify the number of children who are under the age of 5 who are blind or visually impaired, and then figure out what resources are needed. Are there enough teachers of blind and visually impaired out in the schools for the 3 and 4 year olds? Or does the Indiana School for the Blind have enough resources to support those children? So really identifying what they're, one, how many are out there, because, it's census data is lacking. We take care of Babies Count, which is a national registry for infants and toddlers who are blind or visually impaired. And that's a collaborative effort, but, that's just the ones that VIPS are finding. So, what about the ones that, haven't been referred to us yet, but are out in the state that still need access to our resources? So, but I will definitely take you up on that. So I will make sure to send, information over as it comes up. Thank
you.
Have you
contacted the Indiana Academy of Ophthalmology to ask doctors to contact you?
Yes. Actually wrote an article about VIPS, and it was published in their newsletter.
This is Dee. I am the Legislative and Advocacy Committee Chair. So if you would want to forward anything of that nature to myself or more to Rita, that would be great.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
And Rich Bondahar has his hand up.
Thank you, Dee. And this is a great presentation. I just had a couple quick questions, if you don't mind. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it just the preschool age children that you serve, or is it as they proceed through grade school and further?
So we just serve birth to 3 years old here in Indiana. And then typically the Indiana School for the Blind or Visually Impaired or the developmental preschool within their local schools, or if they decide they want to go to private school, however, they won't get many services in a private school. That's typically through IDEA, through that, federal law. That's when those children will start going through that process.
Okay, because the reason I was asking, you mentioned your daughter going to a public school, which I think is wonderful, because I did as a visually impaired person. Not there's anything wrong with someone who doesn't, because they're both very good. But ACBI also gives money. We donate to the Indiana Blind Children's Foundation, which I think is part of the School for the Blind. Mm-hmm. But we donate to VIPS, and we probably should. And do you have any idea of how many people, visually impaired kids, are going to public schools versus the School for the Blind? Because ACBI just doesn't seem to know much about what those people are doing or have a connection. And I think if we would maybe give the same funds that we're giving to the School for the Blind to organizations that support those children, we could also establish some contacts and some kind of a rapport, and also hear from them about what their needs are, because we just don't hear much about it. And I don't think that's intentional. I'm not being critical. I'm just being honest.
I'm entirely sure I know that they're getting ready to move off campus for the next 5 years, I believe. So that could perhaps be the lack of contact. But I'm grateful that she is at the same school that my son is at, honestly. And he's in high ability and the intermediate school, the same school that Lola's in. So it's pretty, I feel very lucky, because I know, it's dependent a lot on where you live and also how many feathers you're willing to ruffle. to make sure that your kid gets the services that they need, that they're entitled to. I think a lot of times parents get told, well, this is all that we can offer. And you're like, nope, nope, nope. That's against the law. That's not right. Mm-hmm. And so we really try to help them understand, what their rights are as parents for their children, so that they know how to advocate for them as well.
I'd answer Richard's question. One of the reasons why I started the Literacy Project, it's about a 20-to-1 ratio of children who are mainstreaming versus the School for the Blind. My census data is lacking because I've been doing a lot of stuff, and it's a huge number of children who are mainstreaming in Indiana and all the other states.
Mm-hmm.
Mainstreaming is being promoted and that is a good thing. But the thing is right now, the majority of them will be going back to their public school systems for the next 5 years, while the campus is revised so that School for the Blind and School for the Deaf can be made on. They'll be on the same campus.
Mm-hmm.
One number that was quoted to me was 9,000. But I have not checked the accuracy of that number, children being mainstreamed in Indiana. But I'm not sure that's accurate.
think there's another hand up, Deanne, but I don't know who.
It was Pat and Mel, Rich, and Pat. Can you lower your own hands? Thank you.
There you go. Okay. This is Rita. Talking about what Rich is hitting on there about statistics, school for the blind versus public school. I'm wondering if the Department of Education of Indiana would have those statistics.
I would imagine so. I'm not sure exactly. I feel like a lot of times these kids are not counted. And, one thing that we did was we lobbied to get the pediatric birth defects and problems registry, which I loathe the name of that. So I'm advocating for a new name for that as well. But they had, older names and visual impairments, so that, these children, pediatricians weren't even counting kids or sending them to the birth defects registry because there was antiquated terminology. And so we were successful in updating that. But I would imagine that the Department of Education would have some kind of information.
That is where I got my data. And they were the people who called me in 2020 asking me to help you. I was called by the assistant director of the Department of Education, who introduced me to you. So they do
Mel, I see you still have your hand up. Do you have another question? Okay. Then let's move on. Does anyone else have any questions?
No.
Well, the reason I just brought it up, I just feel like a lot of those parents probably don't know where to go or even what to ask. And I think some of these blindness organizations like us could probably help with some of that if we had a connection of some sort.
Oh, absolutely. Perhaps it's at one of our parent empowerment programs where, if we had a panel of adults who are blind or visually impaired, we've done something like that in the past, and it's really interesting to hear what parents ask, what do you wish that your parents did that differently, or what do you wish they didn't do, or getting that perspective and that firsthand insight, I think is really valuable. And like I said, just for them also, myself included, to recognize that, life goes on. And just because your child has a diagnosis of blindness or are visually impaired or have any additional disabilities, doesn't mean that they're not going to learn and they're not going to love and be loved and, develop. And it might just be in a way that they didn't envision for their child, but, just seeing that, it's okay. And, being able to ask questions and get people that, have that firsthand experience, I think would be really valuable for them.
Well, I would hope, for example, and this is just a small example, that those kids would, let's say, get help. The ones in public schools now I'm talking about, and maybe they do, because I'm long since out of the loop. I'm a retired guy. But For example, I hope those kids are getting help using assistive technology, you know, on computers and phones and things like that, because that's what they're going to be called upon to do in the real world when they start looking for jobs and so forth.
Yeah, and that's, it's a, you know, just unfortunate, dependent on where they live, you know, and what the, you know, I know the School for the Blind does a lot of outreach for in the schools in, you know, different parts of the state, and are, you know, having carfuls of, I'm sure, stuff to help, you know, be able to provide those different types of opportunity, you know, learning opportunities. But I think that they also just launched a low vision clinic where they're at this ISBVI, where they're having assistive technology evaluations, essentially, and getting assistive technology in the hands of the kids. So, but that would be great if it would be, you know, open up statewide, because, you know, I do think about those kids that are in, especially, you know, different rural areas and, you know, might not be the technology, but, you know, are they getting Braille and large print instruction and, you know, a Braille writer and, you know, all those things that, you know, will help them with their literacy as they continue on in their schooling years.
Well, we're about 18 minutes still. Does anyone else have any questions?
Yeah, I do. This is Dolly. I had my hand raised, but I guess you didn't notice it. But anyway, yeah, I think this is a wonderful, wonderful talk that we've had tonight. And I just want to say that when I was growing up and I couldn't see well, my parents were more in denial than anything, you know. They mm-hmm. wanted me to be just like the other three siblings before me.
True.
And sometimes it made me a stronger person, but, you know, and even going through school, I bluffed my way through, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to read some of the textbooks, very hard, but mm-hmm. I was the kid who carried, you know, six big textbooks home, you know, mm-hmm. and tried to memorize a lot of things. And yeah. even when we had the eye test, you know, when you have an eye test at school, they had the chart up front. I would memorize it as the kids were, you know, in line.
mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I kind of missed out on a lot not going to, you know, through a special program. But yet I feel like it didn't hurt me really too bad. You know, going through regular school and everything.
Yeah, but I think about, yeah, the fact that it was almost like a, you know, just a way to get not your only yourself to get, be able to learn, you know, and gather the information. But, you know, also, we do have a lot of, parents that, and especially, a lot of times dads, especially, you know, go through denial. They are often mm-hmm. fix it, you know, types, and, they want to fix their child's visual impairment and make it just go away or make it improve or, and so, a lot of times it's our teachers are really, you know, recognizing not only where the child is developmentally and helping them with their goals, but also recognizing where the parents are in the emotional journey of it. And kind of walking them along through it. You know, some are ready and eager for information. You know, leave me everything you possibly can. We've had others where our teacher couldn't wear a VIF shirt walking into the home because the parents didn't want anyone else to see that their child had services that were related to a visual impairment. However, mm-hmm. I will say that 2 years later, as that child was aging out, they, you know, came to our walk, and our teacher went, you know, sat in on the child's case conference, and they still remain in contact, and, you know, they are all have VIP shirts now. So, you know, it's a delicate process. And I think that's why we have to just find such good people, such good teachers that, you know, not only understand that vision loss component and that early childhood education part, but also, you know, really how to guide parents along the way, because they're wanting someone to look into a crystal ball and tell them that life is going to be okay. And, or when is my child going to do this? Or do you think they'll do that? And, you know, that puts a lot of pressure on a teacher, but, you know, they are amazing. What they do and the guidance that they give these families and the hope that they give them and, the resources. And it's just, I've worked for VIPS for 10 years now. It'll be my 10th anniversary in July. And, never did I think that, you know, an organization that changed my life, that I'd be able to do something that would be able to help others. But I see the teachers and, you know, see what they do and the impact they have on the families. And it's like, I just can't imagine doing anything else.
Well, we do live in an ableistic society. Mm-hmm. And we all look for, you know, if you're not quote unquote perfect, you know, you're less than perfect. And we need to change the mindset to looking at the gains that people with disabilities have, including us with visual impairments. Because making the child feel like that they're okay in their own skin is going to be more helpful to them than making them fearful of what they're going to encounter.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I like the idea of with children, especially those that have multiple disabilities, having a way to show what their strengths are. Mm-hmm. They may have an area that they're gifted in. I'm thinking they may be good with their hands. So, you know, there might be some kind of craft that they're good at, and to show them how everybody appreciates their skill, you know, sell their craft to the public and things, just, you know, positive feedback on those strengths. And I believe everybody on this call tonight, unless somebody came in late or something, we all on this call have some degree of vision loss. And I know the ones that are on here that I am familiar with, some, we don't have our own gifts. You know, God gave us our own gifts. We're different from each other. We have different vision loss or levels, but I'm thinking, okay, David is good at writing. He's written a book. We're waiting on it to be published so we can all get a copy signed, you know, and all. But, you know, and if we can do that kind of thing with kids, just to build up their self-confidence and everything, well, yeah, maybe I can't walk too great, or maybe I can't use my left hand like I'm supposed to, but I can do this and this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. And I went to public school. Some on this call have gone to public school, and some have gone to IDEA School for the Blind. And I was also a child of the 60s. So when I was in high school in the 70s, this is before the ADA got really noticed. And the only accommodations I had, because I was very, very low vision, was in typing class, I got a large print typing book so I wouldn't have to stick my nose to the page of the other book. And the only other thing was my mom made sure, she was my advocate, she made sure that I was sitting in the front row all through high school, if at all possible. Because back then, everybody was in alphabetical order. So I was a T, my last name was Thomas, I was going to be in the back of the room. And being nearsighted, that wasn't going to work for me. You know, but I think we need to reinforce the ADA a lot too. Accommodation and things like that. But I also wanted to mention too, ACBI, as an affiliate of ACB, our national organization, would love to start having some special interest committees within our organization. And one is ACB Families. And ACB Families is designed for families who have members who are visually impaired. Most of our members that I'm aware of, it's like, well, Rich and Regina, they are both blind, but their children are sighted. I don't know, but I don't know if any of our members that have a vision problem who also has a child who is visually impaired. I may just not know the person, but that's something that it would be really nice to partner with VIPS at some point and kind of work with you guys and the children and the parents, and kind of help you guys know there's other sources out there like ACB Families that could also be another way to get information, you know, for raising the kids.
Sure. Yeah, that's great. We'd love that information.
Yeah. I know Kentucky has a very active group down there of ACB Families. And probably the office down there has heard about that. But, yeah. So, anyway, that's my 2 cents worth. Okay. You guys, well, anybody else have a question or a comment?
Dolly still has her hand up, but I think she's got her hand up since she last talked. But does anyone else have any questions? Or in that, I don't see any other hands.
Well, I'm very grateful for, you know, the opportunity to share tonight and, you know, just look forward to, you know, finding ways that we can, you know, have our families have access to you wonderful people and ways that we can collaborate in the future. And, you know, just thank you for all that you're doing.
Oh, thanks for speaking.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Meredith. And we'll be in touch with you concerning the fall convention and maybe how we can have you or you present, or we can maybe have a workshop that might pull in some of your parents.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
And thank you. You know, our convention is going to be in Indianapolis. So hopefully you've got a lot of parents in that area that would be able to come, I hope.
Yes, I will just say that it is sometimes challenging for our families. You know, I being a mom of a child with, you know, a wheelchair, and, you know, Lola is mobile, but, you know, a lot of our families have kids with lots of extra needs. So, you know, is Zoom an option, or is this an in-person only conference?
No, it's most of, well, I think majority of the sessions will be virtual.
Okay.
Yeah. Only things that won't be are things like, I don't think anything on Friday except for the opening session.
Am I right? We're gonna make it as hybrid as possible. So that we're gonna do things as well as Zoom events. However, we have discussed that there are a couple of Zoom or a couple of things that may not be Zoom appropriate, and that they're more hands-on and more something that you'd want to do in person. And so some, we may have a couple sessions that you will not be able to access through Zoom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
We're going to have an excursion on Friday afternoon to the Children's Museum. If any of the parents have children that would benefit from that, maybe kids with low vision that could see the exhibits a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, if you just want to share the information with me, that would be great.
Okay.
We'll do that.
Perfect.
Okay. Larry, I'll let you end the call.
Oh, I get to end the call. Okay. If there's nothing else, we're going to, we're not adjourning. This isn't a board meeting, right? Okay. All right.
No.
We will just say goodbye and thank you to everybody who came on tonight. And thank you again, Meredith, for your time.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Have a great night, everyone.
All right.
Okay.